You're listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM, and RiverWestRadio.com globally. All archives can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Hello once again and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. I'm your host, NTSC. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we are against so very much, what do we actually stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we try desperately to explore what a free society would look like sometimes, while most of the time just recognizing that none of us today are truly free and whining about it. At time of recording, it is 2020 and I am eating a cookie. Because sometimes you just gotta eat a cookie, you know? Sometimes you gotta sit back and stuff your face with a cookie that is fully bigger than your clenched fist. Because I'm an adult. And I get to have a cookie sometimes. Now, most people would not be eating a cookie on their radio program. But I am not most people. I stand before you. Well, I'm sitting. I sit here proudly eating my cookie as a radical act of self-care. So, listeners of the program, the few of you that there are, most of you are related to me or are very good friends of mine, will know that sometimes I talk about my emotional state. And I think, God, was it all the way back in episode 30? Is that the one? All archives of this show are available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. God, I've done a lot of shows. Jiminy Christmas. Anyway, I've been having a rough week. Man, have I been having a rough week. A lot of the material that I consume online, as with so many people, it comes from a bubble. It comes from a bubble, you know, because it feels good to consume media being produced by people who think like you do, the royal you, you know. It feels good to consume media being produced by people with whom you agree, who share your worldview. So a lot of the media that I consume is being specifically produced by anti-capitalists, anti-fascists, anti-authoritarians. Now, I essentially, when I'm working, I'm listening to podcasts and videos and programs that are produced by communists and anarchists and syndicalists and Democratic Confederalists and Maoists and Leninists and Marxists. And this is what I steep myself in because it keeps me up to date primarily on the work that these groups are doing to try and further the cause of literally saving the planet from imminent climate collapse and at the same time emancipating the human family. I use that phrase a lot on this show. Emancipating the human family. And I really like that phrase in particular because to me it cuts to the absolute core. We've talked about neoliberalism going all the way back to, God, episode 2. And we've talked about it a lot in episodes, you know, since. But one of the most vicious and subtle things that the neoliberal program has sought to accomplish, and quite blatantly, quite openly, Margaret Thatcher actually talked about this, changing the culture, altering society so that it was more in line with capitalism. Because Margaret Thatcher was no dummy. She recognized that the human spirit, our culture, was at direct odds with the goals and aims of the economic system that we live in. The human spirit is cooperative. It is collaborative. It is empathetic to human suffering, and capitalism is not. Capitalism cannot be empathetic to human suffering. If it was, if any corporation or company or business is actually sympathetic to human suffering, it would lose the competition with other corporations. You must be as cutthroat as possible. You know, why do you think the 1980s saw such a swell in purchasing of Sun Tzu's The Art of War? Anyway, this is kind of hemming and hawing. Today's episode is not actually about neoliberalism. Today's episode is not actually about any of that stuff. I just needed to start the episode by saying I've been in a really rough spot. Because, here we go, back to the earlier point, I've been in this bubble. I live in this bubble because it helps keep me going, because I can see directly the work that other people are doing to try and save the world. Well, I stepped out of my bubble earlier this week, and what I saw, and it may have been a skewed vision, and I hope that it was, what I saw made it appear like the majority of the world's population doesn't care. That the majority of the population is understandably too busy just trying to survive to take the time to attempt to combat in any way this extremely dangerous system that we all live in. And this does speak somewhat to the actual thrust of this week's episode. This week's episode is going to be about a new publication. This is going to be a very brief discussion about History of the World in Seven Cheap Things, A Guide to Capitalism, Nature, and the Future of the Planet, written by Raj Patel and Jason W. Moore. Okay, so I first learned about this through an article written about it at truthout.org. You can read more about it there. So one of the things that caught my eye, because I like science, I'm a big fan of science, and you all probably know about the great epochs of history. You know, these are the scenes, right? You know, C-E-N-E. Not all of them end in that, but you know, there's the Pleistocene and the Jurassic and the, you know, Cretaceous and all that kind of stuff. Well, our most recent era has been dubbed by portions of the scientific community the Anthropocene, or Anthropocene, however you want to say it. And that essentially translates to the human epoch, right? The epoch which has most been affected by human activity. And it is extremely measurable. This epoch is measurable in the sediment geologically by things like plastics. So there is a recognizable, measurable layer of microplastics now in the geologic record that is marking our common era. Right alongside it, or kind of fused with it, is a layer of radioactivity because of the nuclear era. Nuclear tests and nuclear bombing has left a measurable line in the geologic record of our activities, our nuclear activities. So those are just a few of the things that geologists used to coin the term the Anthropocene. However, the book argues that that is an incorrect term. So for portions of today's episode, I'm going to be quoting directly from the interview with the authors at truthout.org. So the question that the interview starts with is, you begin the book by introducing the concept of the Capitaleocene. Can you explain what that term means and its significance? And then one of the co-authors, Raj Patel, says, we begin the book talking about the Capitaleocene as a way of intervening in discussions that are proliferating right now, particularly in the climate change debate around the Anthropocene, which is a term coined by geologists and climate scientists to describe what it is that humans have done to the planet. The reason we wanted to call it the Capitaleocene, in fact, my co-author Jason W. Moore coined the term in an earlier work, is to observe that to call it the Anthropocene is misleading. The Anthropocene is a term that suggests that there's a geological era that is characterized by human activity. But it's more accurate to say that the scale of this geological era, characterized by the things that humans have laid into the fossil record, things like plastic, things like residues from atmospheric nuclear weapons tests, things like chicken bone, none of those things have been caused by humans in the normal operation of going about our daily business. On the contrary, it's a particular kind of human society that has caused all these things, and that's capitalism. So we call it the Capitaleocene because it's not some innate quality of humans that has destroyed the planet. It's a product of how the system of capitalism operates. If we are to stop the destruction of the planet, then we need to name the systems that cause it and observe that there are some humans who had nothing to do with it. That some humans are very importantly not to blame for what gets called the Anthropocene. Labeling them with the same term as other humans not only blames the victim in some cases, but it also obscures potential solutions to the climate crisis that aren't about exploiting nature, but are about entering into a much more reasonable relationship to the web of life. And then the interviewer asks, and you argue that we are coming to the end of the Capitaleocene era, to which Raj Patel responds, what we point out in the book is that the climate catastrophe is such that the Capitaleocene cannot persist, not in the way that it has for the past few hundred years. We don't make any prognostications about how capitalism ends, but we do note that capitalism began in a period of intense climate change and the spread of epidemic disease. We observe that capitalism has shown itself very adept at creating climate change and also through industrial agriculture creating the conditions that would be perfect incubating grounds for epidemic disease. So we're not saying capitalism is going to end next Tuesday, but we are saying that the conditions that destroyed feudalism, the system that predated capitalism, were all about epidemic disease and climate change. Well, they seem to be on us again. Okay, so I want to pay attention quickly to that first question and Raj Patel's answer to it. There is a habit. And it's quite understandable that we fall into this habit because we are all of us very affected by the mainstream media. And I hate to demonize the mainstream media, but honestly, it's part of the problem. Propaganda works. It works very well. It's been proved to work. And all of the mainstream media are owned by essentially those who have vested interests in the status quo. You're not going to hear really radical solutions to the problems that face the human family on that media. And one of the stories that get pushed all the time is that there are individual choices and changes that we as a populace need to make to save the planet. And it's absolute BS. And we all know that it's absolute BS. At least we ought to. You can absolutely, and we've talked about this in past episodes, but I'll say it again. You can absolutely stop using your personal vehicle. if you are able to do so. And there are very few people who can actually do, who can stop using a personal vehicle. You can walk more places if you can walk. You can absolutely stop using plastic straws if you want to. The math and the science is definitive in this case. And we talked actually about this specifically going back into, where was that? Oh, it was a while ago, wasn't it? Episode 23, Fascism Part 2. We talk about the election of Bolsonaro in Brazil, and we talk about the real impact on the climate and the actual variables which are marching us so quickly towards irreversible climate collapse. And that is not your personal choices, because your personal choices do not decide whether or not, for example, an enormous agribusiness just slops out trillions of tons of human of animal waste into the environment every single year. You don't make that choice. Your deciding to buy a bratwurst is not going to create a market force which will generate factory farming. It's not going to happen. That happens because creating cheap meat and all of the negative externalities that come with factory farming to produce cheap meat, including all of the extremely dangerous working conditions, the emotional toll that it takes on the people that work there, and the systemic torture of those animals, some 56 billion of which we raise and torture and kill every single year, that all exists because it is profitable. It is profitable to those who own the business. That is why it exists. It does not exist because you want to have a chicken leg every now and then. It is an absolute false equivalency to say that you or I and our personal choices in this system are to blame for global climate collapse. It's ridiculous. It's passing the buck. It's a figure that we've quoted all the time on this show, and you'll see it come up online in various places, but essentially 70% of all climate change pollution is coming from 100 companies. 100 companies are directly to blame for 70% of the pollution that is causing global climate collapse. You boycotting them isn't going to make a difference, because A, you actually can't. In one of the episodes, which I can't remember now, we talked about the interwoven web of conglomerates, monopolies, and cartels. There are so few businesses actually at play in the global economy that you could boycott 100 businesses and you would still be perpetuating the machine that is destroying the planet, just because they're all intermarried. All of their hands are so interconnected, and all of them are so heavily invested economically and financially in one another that there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do financially to hurt them, except if you were to remove yourself 100% from consumerism, which again, you cannot do, because you and I are completely and entirely dependent on this system. We cannot grow our own food to save our lives. We cannot make our own medicine to perpetuate ourselves. We cannot create our own housing because we don't own the land. We are not the owning class. We are the working class, and we are entirely dependent on those above us for our lives. And so, the false narrative that your personal choices will in any way, your personal consumer choices or your personal voting record will in any way save the planet is a ridiculous absurdity. And that's one of the reasons I like the new terminology developed by these authors in their book, which we'll say again, their book called History of the World in Seven Cheap Things, A Guide to Capitalism, Nature, and the Future of the Planet. I really like the invention of the term the Capitalocene, because it points the finger at what is actually to blame for global climate collapse. It's not you. It's not me. it's not necessarily even the people that own these businesses. Like, as much as I hate them, as much as I think they are dangerous sociopaths, I hesitate to demonize them, because they, just like you and I, are struggling in this system. Well, they're not necessarily struggling, but they're working within this system. They're working within the rules of the game. We've talked about this, obviously, in the past, but pointing the blame to those individuals is almost as wrong as pointing the blame to you or I for our consumer choices. What is incentivizing them to make vast cheap meat, to make vast swaths of cheap plastic? The thing that's incentivizing them is not just human greed. It's not some weird phenomenon that's inherent to the human spirit. On the contrary, what is incentivizing them is the system in which they were raised. And that is capitalism. That is the profit motive. That is what capitalism is. When you boil it down to its absolute essential, it is the motivation of profit above all else. And, you know, I have really difficult conversations with people that are dear and close to me, like my mother, for example. And she thinks very fiercely that human greed is the cause of these problems. And I disagree vehemently. I can see where she's coming from. Yeah, there's greedy people, absolutely. But what rewards greed? There are systems which we could adopt today that would reward cooperation, equality, and living in harmony with the earth. We do not live in a system like that. We can create it if we want to badly enough, and we must. But that is not the system that the billionaires are operating under. They are thriving in a system that absolutely rewards profit over everything else. Period. Full stop. Every concession that they have had to make in service of the environment, in service of the working class, has been wrung out of them. It has been wrested from them through civil disobedience, through uncivil disobedience in the form of actual direct action and violence. And it has been a battle every step of the way. Welcome to the class war. That's what we're in. So, I really want to read the opening sentence or the opening paragraph of this article on truthout.org. And the article is called Humans Aren't Inherently Destroying the Planet, Capitalism Is. The opening paragraph reads, "One of the biggest ironies of the right-wing trope accusing socialists of wanting quote-unquote free stuff is that in reality, the entire capitalist economy would immediately collapse if it couldn't continue to rely on free stuff. Without free or artificially cheap access to things like natural resources, care work, labor, and a whole array of other elements, capitalism could not stay afloat. In fact, the only way that capitalism was ever able to even emerge was through a process of quote-unquote primitive accumulation, where things like slavery and colonialism were utilized to extract free labor and resources." Okay, it's time for another bite of this cookie. It's been too long.
How?
Oh my God, it's so good. It's an enormous ginger snap. That is my favorite kind of ginger snap. It doesn't have any snap to it. Okay. So, another important question asked by the interviewer of the authors. "I want to get into each of the different cheap things in more depth in a moment. But can you just briefly go over this idea of cheapness and how it relates to capitalism?" And Raj says, "Capitalism is a system that doesn't pay its bills. And one way of thinking about that is the idea of cheapness. That's why we've titled our book, A History of the World in Seven Cheap Things. It's a way of pointing out how capitalism dodges the payments of things that it requires in order to be profitable. It's not necessarily a conscious decision of the early capitalists that a system like this would be required, but it has emerged over time that capitalism has figured out ways to defray or move around the real consequences of its uses of things like nature, work, care, lives, energy, food, and money. These are all things that capitalists are trying to make a profit from, and in the process are making disappear in the calculation of the bottom line. All of these things are very important for the perpetuation of capitalism, and unfortunately, they're also the sorts of things that are vital to recognize if we are to have a planet worth living on. So this will sound somewhat familiar to those who remember the two episodes that we did a while ago, episodes 52 and 53, titled Wages for Housework and Wages Against Housework. One of the things that Raj Patel mentions is care work. Everything that we do in service of reproductive labor, cleaning ourselves and our houses, washing the dishes, raising children especially, all of those things, for God's sake, having children, all of those things are absolutely required by capitalism to be free. If you were to be actually compensated for all of the reproductive labor that creates the world that we live in, that creates our society, that creates our culture, if you were to be compensated for those things, capitalism would collapse instantaneously. It requires free labor on the part of everybody, every single day, largely on the part of women, to survive. Without that, it fails completely. It falls on its face because it needs slavery, essentially. That's what it boils down to. Capitalism requires slavery. It requires unwaged labor in the hundreds of trillions of hours every single year to continue. Otherwise, it just collapses. And it's one of those contradictions that people just can't. No, it's not that they can't. It's that they're not accustomed to seeing it. You know, you need to be able to take a step back and review the world as much as you are able through a different lens, a lens that is not crafted by the society in which you live. And it's hard to do. It's nearly impossible for a lot of people. Why? Well, that's another thing that capitalism requires is our exhaustion. It absolutely requires our exhaustion because so much of today's economy is based entirely on providing a service of convenience. We don't have time anymore to make our own meals, so we rely on the convenience of businesses making our meals for us and profiting off of that. We don't have time to clean our own houses anymore, so we have to buy a robot that'll clean it for us, and then that robot sells data literally about the geographic outline of our house for profit. All of this stuff. Oh, shoot, we're coming up on the end of the half hour. Okay, we're going to have to talk more about this, and I want to continue the larger discussion of transition towns and transition networks as they relate to the capitalist scene epoch. Until then, thank you so much for listening to The Anti here on River West Radio, WXRW LP Milwaukee. I've been your host, NTSC, and I will be back again next week to discuss further issues as they relate to capitalism and fascism and, most importantly, our incredible shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Keep listening to WXRW. There's new shows coming up, really, really good ones that I'm excited about. The Milwaukee Climate Coalition has a new show that I'm going to be tuning into regularly. Black Panther Hour of Power you need to listen to. So please, keep tuning in. Hey, Sandy, what's coming up in River West this week?